want to study together this morning, why do the righteous suffer? And so we're going to study that this morning and look at some examples from the Bible of why some righteous people suffered. And we'll see then also maybe some things from history, or even be able to examine then situations in our own lives to understand what causes suffering. The scripture that was read in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 16 lets us know that the righteous do sometimes suffer. In 1 Peter chapter 4, if you want to turn there, we'll want to start really in verse 15. Peter there says, "But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters." So he makes it very clear that sometimes we suffer because we're doing wrong things. We're doing bad things, things that we shouldn't do. And that brings suffering. And that really is our first point. One of the reasons that the righteous suffer is because even though they may be righteous, they're not perfect. And so being imperfect, we sometimes do sin. And that sin brings with it suffering. And it brings that in two ways. First of all, it brings suffering because suffering is the natural consequence of sin. That's why God warns us about the sin, tells us what sins to avoid, because He knows that if we do those things, it will cause suffering. So He knows that, and He wants us to be able to avoid that suffering, so He tells us about those things. So we need to always remember, before we contemplate any action, if this is a sin, it's very likely that it will bring suffering on me. Because that is the natural consequence of sin. And we know that. We know that the natural consequence of getting drunk, for example, is having a hangover the next morning. Another consequence of getting drunk is getting sick physically. Another consequence of drinking and alcohol is the loss of control. Another consequence of alcohol, long-term effects as cirrhosis of the liver, types of heart disease and other things that are caused by that alcohol consumption, damage to the kidneys. And there's a lot of things that come as a result of that one sinful act, or certainly the continuation of that sinful behavior. So as Christians, we need to be sure that we're not suffering as a result of the things that we're doing. We need not be committing those sinful things that are going to bring suffering. Another way that sin brings suffering is through the government. In Romans, Paul tells the Roman Christians that that's one of the purposes of the government. If you want to turn to Romans chapter 13, in Romans chapter 13, in the first verse, he tells us that the powers that be are ordained of God. And he's talking there about the government, the governing authorities. And he goes on to explain in verse 4, speaking of those same governing authorities, he says, "For he is a minister of God to thee for good, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain." Peter spoke of not suffering as a murderer. Well, the murderer may not think he's the one suffering. He's killing others. He's not suffering. But if the police catch him at that, he's going to suffer. There's no doubt about it. And so sin can bring suffering in that way. It can bring suffering from the governing authorities. There is another way, a third way also, that sin brings suffering along the same lines as that of the governing authorities. Sin brings suffering because of it. It's its natural consequence. It brings suffering as a result of the government and the governing authorities punishing the evildoer, as Romans 13 says. And then finally, of course, sin brings suffering because if it continues and if it is unrepented of, it can cause someone to lose their soul in hell. So it brings suffering for that cause as well. So we see that many times when we suffer, and many of us, if not all of us, could point to times in our lives when we suffered because of a sin that we committed. Perhaps when we were children, we lied to our parents. And our parents, as the governing authorities, when they found out about that, they whipped us or spanked us or whatever the case may be. And then they told us we couldn't do this or that or have this or that or whatever the case might be. But we got into trouble and we suffered as a result of that. On the other hand, it may be even since we've been adults, we may have done something that brought upon us some form of suffering. And so we need to constantly be aware of that. Look at a couple of biblical examples of this. Peter is a good example of this. In Matthew chapter 26, we were over in that area this morning during class looking a little bit at the crucifixion of Christ, in particular there, the rejection of the truth that he brought. But in Matthew chapter 26, we want to look down to verses 69 and following. Pretty long chapter there, Matthew 26, has 75 verses. We look to verse 69, it says that Peter sat without in the palace, and the damsel came unto him, saying, Thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee, but he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And this happened three times, something very similar to this. Someone would come and say something to him about Jesus, and he just swore up and down that he didn't know the man, finally, the third time. And then it says in verse 75, Peter remembered the word of Jesus that he would deny him three times, and he went out and wept bitterly. Peter's suffering in this particular case was simply the suffering of a contrite spirit, the suffering of the guilt of knowing that he had done what he shouldn't have done. Of course, it had other effects. Those people who might have seen the courage of a follower of Christ instead saw cowardice. Peter had an opportunity to be a witness for Christ to those people who asked him about it. You were with him too? He could have stood up boldly and said, Yes, I was. I was with him. I believe he's the Christ, like he had said 10 chapters earlier in Matthew 16. But he didn't do that. Instead, he chickened out and he denied Christ before them. And because of that, he suffered. He also then suffered a rebuke by Christ after Christ's resurrection. When Christ came back, John chapter 20 tells us about that situation when Jesus asked him then if he loved him. And Peter had to receive the rebuke of Christ for that. And of course, he tried to turn the light away from him. He pointed to John and he said, Well, what about him? And Jesus had to point out to him in chapter 21, rather, I said 20. 21 is the chapter we're looking for, where beginning in verse 15, Jesus begins to ask Peter if he loves him and then tells him to go and feed his sheep. And so Peter suffered because of his sin. And we might say, well, that's a little sin. That's not a big thing. He just was scared, and so he kind of backed down and he wasn't willing to be bold. That's a little sin. Well, little sins can still bring consequences. And sometimes the consequences that are brought are in proportion to how devastating the sin can be. It can certainly work that way. Other times, however, the sins cause consequences that we would never imagine. Things that last for generations. We look at the case of David in 2 Samuel chapter 12. David was a righteous man. Peter was a righteous man. Yet both of these men, not perfect, and so because of that, brought suffering upon themselves and others as well. Other innocent people, in fact. But in 2 Samuel chapter 12, we see David, after he has gotten himself involved with Bathsheba, and Nathan the prophet has to come and use a parable to get David to see his sin and to realize what he has done. And then he realizes that he has sinned against the Lord. But in verse 12 of 2 Samuel chapter 12, God says some interesting things. Verse 12 he says, "For thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun." And David said unto Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said unto David, "The Lord also hath put away thy sin, thou shalt not die." David had committed adultery. He had coveted his neighbor's wife. Committing adultery under the Old Testament law was a cause for death. Death by stoning to both the man and the woman who had been involved in that adulterous relationship. And so David is told, though, that God has forgiven his sin and he won't die. But that doesn't mean that the sin doesn't still have some consequences for David. In fact, it has many. We saw in verse 12 that God is going to cause one of David's servants, one of his neighbors, the Bible says, we actually see when it occurs that it's David's own son, who takes his wives and has relations with them in the sight of all Israel. Everyone could see. And that was one of the consequences. He also says in verse 14, "Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child that is born unto thee shall surely die." And we might think, that's so unfair. God, why would you make the child die? The child didn't do anything wrong. The child's innocent. But remember, that innocent child would get to go on to heaven. David was the one who was going to have to suffer as a result of that. And we see that happening. When that child was sick, David suffered. He fasted day and night. He prayed. He wore sackcloth and ashes. He did everything he could to try to get God to change his mind, but it didn't work. But we see also that because of some of the sins of David, in other cases, other times, the sword would never depart from David's house because of this, we see in verse 10. "Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house because thou hast despised me and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife." That means even his descendants would keep suffering because of the sin that he committed. Heard Alex tell the story, and perhaps some of you have heard him talk too, about the fact that one of his ancestors just a few generations back was a member of the church. But because either of her failure to teach her children or because of the children's failure to obey the mother, whatever the case may be, that was forgotten, that was lost. And so there were some generations in there that didn't know the truth, that never heard the gospel preached. And then it came back around and he got to hear the gospel and obey the gospel again. But because of the sin generations back, others had to suffer through that line. And so we see that being the case with David. David committed the sin, but his household, his family, his descendants were going to have to suffer as a result of the sin he committed. We could point to other situations in the Bible where someone who was basically a righteous person did something that was unrighteous, that was sinful, and suffered as a result of it. But secondly, we see that the righteous suffer because others are wicked. The righteous suffer because others are wicked. If we look to Genesis chapter 4, we see the story there of Cain and Abel. And Abel was a righteous man, did what God wanted him to do. Gave the sacrifice, the offering that God wanted him to give. Cain, on the other hand, didn't. He didn't do what God wanted him to do. Verse 7, God speaking to Cain says, "If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted?" God says, all you've got to do to be accepted is do what's right. But Cain didn't listen to God. He didn't heed the warning. Instead, God says, if thou doest not well, sin lies at the door. If you don't do what's right, sin is there waiting for you. It's at the door, and if you don't do what's right, it's going to take over. And so then we see in verse number 8, Cain talked with Abel his brother. And it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. Slew him, the King James says. He killed him. He killed his brother. He murdered him. Murdered him in cold blood, we would say. Because Abel had done what was right, and Cain had not done what was right. And because Abel received the favor for doing what was right, he received God's goodwill, and Cain received God's rebuke. Cain's jealousy and envy overtook him, and he killed his brother. Another beautiful example of someone who is righteous suffering because of the wickedness of others is the case of Christ. We certainly know that to be the case. Perfect man, never committed a single sin, and yet he suffered, physically speaking, possibly with the ridicule as well, more perhaps than anyone else in the world. Not to mention the fact that even God himself, the Father, turned his back on Christ on the cross. We see that those things recorded for us in Matthew 26 and 27 as well as in the other Gospels. But we see him beaten. We see him stripped of his clothing, and we see him flogged. We see the mocking of the robe and the crown made out of thorns. All of these things, and then hung on a cross for all to see and for all to pass by and mock at him. Even the thief hanging on the cross next to him, who was guilty, still was mocking Jesus. And the other thief, of course, had to rebuke him for that. But we see that we often, as righteous individuals, will suffer because others are wicked. We see it most often in our world today, at least in our country, because there's not so much the hatred toward religion that there may be in other countries, and Christians aren't persecuted as they were in New Testament times, perhaps. But we suffer still. Many times it's because of the things that other people do. We talked a moment ago about alcohol and the problems that it will bring, the suffering it will bring upon the person who consumes it. But that can also lead to suffering for others. We see quite often the suffering of the family who's lost children or other loved ones because a drunk driver hit them. Of course, we see the suffering of a family who's had a loved one taken away from them by someone who is violent and killed someone else. So we see that righteous people sometimes do suffer because of the wickedness of others. And we often ask the question, well, why couldn't God protect the righteous from those things? And hopefully we'll give a couple of answers to that as we go along. First of all, we see that the righteous suffer under this idea of the others being wicked. The righteous suffer because God allows free will. God allows human beings. He created us in that way that we would make our own decisions and be allowed to live then with the consequences of those decisions. You and I certainly enjoy the fact that we have free will. Because we have free will, we get to choose what we want to eat, what we want to wear, what we want. If we didn't have free will, everything in our life would be decided for us. We can decide what time to go to bed. We can decide what kind of car we want to drive. We can decide if we'd rather buy something else and not even have a car. We can decide all of those things because we have free will. We can decide whether we obey God or whether we do whatever we selfishly desire to do because we have free will. But since we have free will, that also means that those wicked people out there have free will. They have the choice to decide whether they're going to do what's right or wrong. They have the choice to decide whether they're going to get drunk and then drive a car. They have a choice whether they're going to take that gun or that knife or poison or whatever else they might choose to use as a weapon to take somebody else's life or to harm somebody else. They have the choice to decide whether they're going to rob your house or my house or somebody else's house. You see, we love free will when it's our free will. But what we have to understand is, in order for us to have free will, everyone else has free will. That's the way God created us. The way God created human beings. To have that free will. To do what they chose when they chose. You see, there are many animals, plants, and other creatures in the world that don't have that choice. A rock that's on the side of a mountain doesn't get to decide whether it's going to roll down the mountain or not. Gravity will decide for it. It doesn't have a choice. Gravity, on the other hand, doesn't have a choice on whether it's going to make something fall or not. It just does. A plant doesn't have a choice of whether it's going to live or die. Doesn't have a choice of where it's going to grow. No. A plant grows wherever it's planted. And if the conditions are right, it lives. If the conditions aren't right, it dies. Salmon have no choice. It is completely instinctual for them when it's time for them to mate to swim back upstream to the place where they were born. Don't have any choice about it. Can't say, you know what, I don't want to do that. I want to stay right here. Nope. They don't have a choice. See, because all of those animals, plants, and all the other things that God created don't have free will. It's a blessing that we have as human beings. Instead of having to live on instincts and live on the things that are built into us, we can think, we can learn, we can reason, and we can choose to do whatever is right or whatever is wrong. We have that free will, and the wicked have it as well. And so because others are wicked, and because they choose the wrong sometimes, they will bring suffering on those who are righteous. Then we see another reason for the righteous to suffer. The righteous many times suffer because Satan is tempting them. When we think about the temptations of Satan, many times we think about the way that he offers us something that we think, oh boy, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Boy, wouldn't it be great to have that? Boy, look how happy those people who are drinking alcohol look. Boy, look how that guy that's got 15 women and he's running around with all of them. Boy, look how it looks like he's just living the good life. Boy, look how that fellow that went to the casino and he won a bunch of money and he's got a new house. Boy, look how good he's doing. And that's what we think about when we think about the temptations of Satan. But Satan tempts in many ways. And not all of them are like that. Satan knows many times what our weakness is. And he knows better than to tempt us with something that won't tempt us. In Acts chapter 4, this was brought up a little bit in class this morning as well. In Acts chapter 4 and in verse number 3, we see Peter and John are teaching. They're up in the temple and they're speaking to the people. They're trying to teach them about Jesus. In verse 3, it says, the Sadducees, is the they there, back from verse 1, the Sadducees came upon them. In verse 3 it says, and they laid hands on them and put them in hold unto the next day, for it was now eventide. They put them in jail first. So Peter and John are having to suffer. They get thrown in jail. They don't get to go home and sleep in their bed. They have to sleep in jail. And as uncomfortable as we might think some jails are today, they were nothing compared to the jails back then. Back then, jails were really, really horrible places to be. So Peter and John get to spend the night in jail, and the next day, they get called before all of the leaders of the Jewish people. And when they had set them in front of them, they start asking them questions. They're interrogating them, trying to figure out what's going on. And then, finally, they command them not to speak, in verse 18, not to speak at all, nor teach in the name of Jesus. It's pretty simple. If you'll just stop doing what's right, you won't get thrown in jail anymore. You won't get interrogated. Nothing bad will happen to you. You won't suffer. You see the subtleness of the temptation Satan uses there? So easy. You don't have to do anything fantastic. Don't have to do anything really bad. Just stop talking. Just be quiet. Just let it go. That's all. No big deal. And then you won't suffer anymore. See? Satan tempts with things like that. And so he, of course, Peter and John answer and say, whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge ye. But we cannot help but speak the things which we have seen and heard. And they did what was right. And because of that, they got to suffer even some more. We see Peter suffering even further. Eventually, it is told us through history and so forth that he died as a result of his Christianity. We see others going through that same thing. Paul was imprisoned and killed because of his Christianity. James was imprisoned and killed because he was righteous. So we see Satan tempting. We want to look at one other case of that. The book of Job. Another example. In Job chapter 1, we want to look down about verse 8. We see all of the angels come before God. And Satan comes. And God asks Satan, where you been? Satan says, oh, I've just been wandering around on the earth. And so God says to him in verse 8, have you considered my servant Job? For there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and escheweth evil, or shuns evil. That's what escheweth means. So God says to Satan, hey, have you noticed how good a man Job is? Satan answers him in verse 9. He says, does Job fear God for nothing? Hast thou not made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. Satan says the only reason Job's serving you is because you've been blessing him and you've been protecting him from anything bad. He says if you let Job suffer just a little bit, he'll curse you. And so God says, okay, you go ahead. You can destroy anything he has, but you can't touch him. Notice God always sets the rules. God always draws the line. Satan is very powerful. Satan is more powerful than you or me. We need to understand that. We need never underestimate Satan's power. But what we do have to always remember as well is God is in control. And God's never going to let Satan tempt you above what you're able, the Bible says. God knew what Job would be able to bear. And God says to Satan, okay, you can have anything that he has is in your power, but not him. And Satan took advantage of that. He destroyed Job's flocks. He destroyed Job's family. He destroyed everything that Job had, except his nagging wife. Left her. and those three wonderful friends who came by to condemn Job and tell him what a horrible person he must have been for God to punish him this way. And we talked a while ago about the fact that sometimes sinning brings the rebuke of God. We talked in the long run of how it can cause you to lose your soul. But sometimes God does punish us when we sin in order to get us to repent. He did that with the children of Israel. Jesus rebuked Peter in order to get him back on the straight and narrow, so to speak. But we see Job here. Lost everything. Satan was tempting him. Look what following God has gotten you. Look what worshiping God has gotten you. Look, everything's destroyed now, Job. Boy, I just think how much better. You might as well just curse God. Even his wife told him, Job, just curse God and die. You'd be better off. Job's wife didn't know much about eternity, because cursing God and dying is not going to make anybody any better off. Certainly wouldn't have made Job any better off. But then, of course, Satan is able to do even more than that. They come back and God says, see, Job still loves me even though you've done all this. And Satan says, well, he's still got his health. Heard the old saying, if you haven't got your health, you haven't got anything? Well, that's Satan's argument. Well, you know, he's got his health. If he didn't have his health, then he'd curse you. Chapter 2. Satan goes forth. God says, okay, but don't kill him. See, again, God draws the line. He says, yeah, you can cause him to lose his health, but you cannot kill him. Save his life. And so Job then is struck by Satan with boils from head to toe. Verse 7 tells us, from the sole of his foot up to the crown of his head, and he suffers. And that's when his wife says, ah, come on, just curse God and die. What are you waiting for? Notice what Job says to her in verse 10. Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? See, Job saw that it was in God's power to either give good things or to not give good things, to allow suffering. Sometimes we don't know the reason. Even though we see why Job suffers here, we understand that he suffered because Satan and God were using him to test his strength and his devotion to God. Satan was trying to tempt him, to steal him away from God, and God was saying, this is a man who's going to do right by me. He's going to stick with me. And they were doing that. They were fighting over Job, so to speak, to see who would retain control over over Job's soul, whether it would be God or Satan. But despite the fact that we see that, and we know why Job suffered, and we know the background there, during all this time of Job's suffering, he didn't know why he was suffering. And that may be the case with us as well. We may suffer for some reason. And it may be a similar reason to the reason Job suffered. It may be Satan trying to tempt us to leave God, to turn away from God. It may be God allowing Satan to test us, to prove to Satan that we're his. But we may not know why we're suffering. But we do know that we do suffer. Going back to 1 Peter chapter 4. First Peter chapter 4 and verse 16, Peter says, yet if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. See, Job suffered, of course at that time he wasn't a Christian, it was before Christ, but he was a righteous man. And he suffered as a righteous man, and he glorified God. Peter tells us we need to do the same thing. He says in verse 19, Wherefore, let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to Him in well-doing, as unto a faithful Creator. Sometimes God may cause us to suffer in this physical world so that we won't love it too much. It's possible for us to grow to love this present world more than we love God. To desire to live this life in this world more than to desire a home in heaven. But what we have to remember, see, is that when we suffer, we need to commit our souls to God and remember that that's what's really important. If this world was perfect, if we never suffered in this life, then why would we want to leave and go to heaven? We'd think this was perfect. We'd think this was paradise. We'd think this was heaven. Our suffering in this life will help us to appreciate heaven all the more. And then finally, we want to see another reason that all will suffer. Because Adam sinned, he brought death into the world. Before the sin of Adam and Eve, there was no death in the world. But because of their sin, death entered the world. God had said to them, "When you eat of that tree, you shall surely die." And they did. They would have lived forever in the garden if they had obeyed God, but they disobeyed Him. They sinned. Because of that, they had to die. Because of that sin as well, we all will have to die. Because of Adam's sin, all die. We're told that in the book of Hebrews. But death, of course, to the Christian, to the righteous, means only a new life in heaven. Before death, however, many times, death brings its own suffering. Because Adam sinned, and God had said, because of sin, we must all die, we all have to die. Now the question then is, how are we going to die? Some, yes, go quite pleasantly in their sleep. But even in those cases where a righteous person dies in their sleep, still there is suffering on his righteous friends and family. When Jay died a few short weeks ago, at his death, even though we rejoice knowing that he was righteous, that he'll go on to heaven, we still, those of us who knew him, suffered because of that. See, death brings suffering. Because of Adam's sin, we'll all have to die. It brings suffering in two ways. One, it brings suffering to those around who suffer the harm and the hurt and the pain of the loss of that loved one. But also, many times, death itself is a form of suffering. We see it all the time. We see the ways that people die. Someone who has overdosed on drugs and dies painfully. Someone who has cancer or AIDS or somewhere. We see it on TV. We see it. Some of us have seen it ourselves with our own eyes. As a righteous person, we may avoid some types of suffering with death. But still, there are many ways that death can claim. There's always disease. There is, of course, accidents, car wrecks, fires, drownings, all kinds of things that bring people's death. There is also then, of course, we talked about earlier, when someone else takes a life. There's that possibility. Then there are natural things such as a hurricane or a tornado, earthquakes. See, all of these things God put in place so that death would come. Because Adam sinned, and because we all sinned, we all have to die. And that death will bring suffering. We can't change the fact that we're going to suffer in this life. But Peter gives us some very good advice. When you suffer, commit your souls unto God. Job didn't know exactly why he was suffering, but he stuck with God anyway. Peter knew why he was suffering. Jesus had told him he was going to do what was wrong, and then he did what was wrong. He knew why he was suffering. He was able to make it right because of that. We have to examine our lives. If we're suffering because of sin that we're committing, we need to get that right. It may be that we think things are going pretty well, and what we're not seeing is that that sin in the future is going to bite us back. We're studying on Wednesday night in the book of Revelation, and we were studying about wickedness and wicked people, and John there compares them to locusts, but with stingers in their tails. And that's the way sin is. It doesn't sting you till you catch the back end of it. It catches you after you've received whatever supposed benefits that sin offered. Then it stings you, and it stings hard, and it causes suffering. Some people go through their entire lives with sin, and it's not until they die and have to face God in judgment that they realize the sting that sin really had. We can overcome that. We can avoid that sting through Christ.